Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Guest today, Matt Sabo. Matt, it's great to have you on. Thanks for being here. And can you tell us, first of all, where you're calling in from and what you do for a living with MixMix?
Thanks for having me. I'm calling in from downtown Chicago here in sunny Illinois.
Awesome.
I'm one of the three co-founders of MixMix, a brand that we created to take control of dosing with savory and sweet salts and sugars that you can add to any food or any beverage.
That's amazing. Yeah, I know I mentioned right before we got on the call. I think I can tell solves an issue of dosing with things like this, whether it's ready to drink foods or, you know, those like very, very potent gummies that like, I think I saw on your website, like taking like a bite of a corner of a gummy or something. It's like definitely I found myself doing sometimes. But I guess other than that, or along with that, what did you kind of find out there in the market as far as an issue or something that you were looking to do a little bit differently or better in this space of consumable delivery mechanism, I suppose, for THC?
Great question. My two co-founders, Allison and Caitlin, and I all came from slightly different places from what motivated us for this product and this brand. But one of the big drivers was we thought was the lack of innovation in the space. There's no shortage of sweet confectionery products. So following what people are comfortable with from a format standpoint, gummies, candy, brownies, like it really dominates what you see for a lot of new edibles. Beverages has been a great innovation in the space. I'm a very happy consumer of that format, and my background in beverage, I see the overlap there. For people that are looking to cut back on alcohol, beverage is a great format for that as well. So when we looked at building this brand and the format itself, we found a really hard time scaling beverage in today's regulatory environment. So having to build a supply chain that was a single state and then do it over and over and over again worked really against us on building really sustainable P&L. We also are big fans of flavor. So when you look at it from a condiments or how do you dial up taste for whatever you're eating or drinking, that led us back to what we thought was a very margin-friendly, convenient on-the-go format in stick packs. So it's like this convergence of the convenience of an RTD, like a ready-to-drink beverage, but with the ability and flexibility to add it to not just drinks, but also to food as well.
Yeah, I guess and looking at this, I actually, when I was originally looking at the website before we hopped on here, I assumed it was a drink mix. It's really fascinating that it's good for, you know, to go on foods as well. So I guess to that point, you know, when you think about using this in, is it meant to be used like in cooking? Does that kind of change the way that it's affected, or is this really meant to be used as like an after cooked, like kind of like almost like a garnish? Does it affect it in any way if you do like cook with it and have like that intense heat like on it?
Yeah. There is an upper limit for THC and other cannabinoids. So after the low 200s Fahrenheit, you start to see some breakdown in the particles. So we don't really push people towards like, this is a, you know, a 12-step recipe for a cooking application. People could obviously do that. And if you just watch that temperature piece of your recipe, no problem. We're a little more come to us, like as a consumer, show us what you want to do with it. So we treat it definitely more like a condiment or a mix that you're adding on top of or a step within. So we love to like make a picture of dressing. You know, a dressing might have so an oil and vinaigrette. Adding mix into that as a way to help it coat your salad or be along for the ride for the recipe that you're building. So I would say a little more for a garnish. We've used every word from condiment to garnish to topper that we can think of. But as a drink mix itself, it's the base of it is salt and sugar. It dissolves and acts like salt and sugar because it is. So it very happily jumps into the beverages. And my personal go-to is I have a lot of non-alc cocktails around the house. So you have something that's already built with a great base of flavor. If you want to add a little bit of functionality with THC to it, it's a really quick and easy way to have a delicious adult drink on the go.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I know you mentioned, obviously, you know, working in each individual state, like if you're selling say, CBD-based THC products, you have to abide by and you can't ship over state lines naturally, right? So how do you kind of grapple with that and, you know, make sure that this is something that you can have scalability with where you can, you know, deliver to all 50 states and operate across kind of state lines that way?
Yeah, we took two approaches. One was build the supply chain so that it's scalable. And that's kind of sounds like a no-brainer, but everything that's not THC in our product is put together centrally. So we have a third-party blender that does the heavy lifting on our bulk flavors and all the other ingredients go into our product. And that allows us to pivot to different states. So if forecasts change, if volumes fluctuate, if one market's going faster than another, we can quickly move that product into that final step, which is combining our THC into product and then packing it off. So just looking at it from a margin perspective on what's going to be areas that you can save from a scale standpoint, that was the largest one that we found. But yeah, it's a consideration. Like, we are a regulated cannabis product. We are obviously looking at testing what a hemp version looks like. And this is a very volatile time for legislation tied to that. A lot of states are looking at their own path to it. Very timely that, you know, this week the federal government's looking at it as well. We don't have a crystal ball on how that turns out. So knowing that this was coming, probably like what's going to happen with hemp, we built our supply chain to work with either hemp today or maybe cannabis in the future for legalization. We'll open up things like direct to consumer or interstate commerce. So our model, or not our model, but our supply chain really doesn't change that much based on that. It'll just change our ability to operate a little more freely and save some cost down the line.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess since you are operating in these regulated markets right now, what was your kind of go-to-market strategy when you got done, you know, developing the product, ready to bring this thing to market? Were you looking to sell into, I guess, kind of like grocery stores, liquor stores, with dispensaries? What was kind of your general like strategy at first when you first brought this to market?
We're hyper-focused on retail cannabis, and there is a very set fulfillment chain with production, fulfillment, secure transport, and then sell into a retail location. There are some states that have indirect to consumer. So Michigan's an example where you can purchase as a consumer from a website and then either go pick it up or have it delivered. And that's through a secure transport network that's already established. We'll look to test those kinds of fulfillment models in those markets, but it all starts at the dispensary. So our job, if we do a great job at it, is create end user demand. Our brand is going to be out there, hopefully where consumers are shopping, and that could be obviously online. And then once they get to that retail experience, we want to be the option that's coming top of mind for a budtender there when people are looking for low dose, great tasting, something new and different. We're trying to hopefully get them shorthand for pulling our product out and giving it a try versus, hey, you know, I'm looking for something that's different from a gummy. What do you have that's different? That's really what our early strategy for go-to-market is.
It's really fascinating to think about the, you know, obviously the cannabis retail, because everything kind of goes through those bud tenders, right? So I don't think there's any other kind of retail locations where that is the case. So it's really fascinating. I talked to somebody else who's kind of doing a similar product. They're like, we basically focus all of our like marketing and like messaging to the bud tenders, because the end user is only going to use it if the bud tender almost like recommends it to them, unless like, I'm sure like some people will come across it and see it and like want it. But it's just a really fascinating kind of dynamic. So how do you grapple with that? I mean, what are you kind of doing in those retail locations to make sure those relationships are sound and that the bud tenders know what it is and what it can do and how it's a little bit different than your typical, you know, edible delivery mechanism for THC?
Well, I think the big thing that we're doing, we are trying to educate the consumer directly. So we've learned over a few years working service side in cannabis, a lot of cannabis consumers that are buying in the regular market have never been to a dispensary. They're going through a friend, they're going through a family member, like the person that they know who goes to the dispensary. They ask, hey, can you top me off for the month? Oh, great, glad you're going. Can you pick me up something? They typically have a much more specific list of things that they're looking for. They're not there browsing, they're not there looking at the dispensary or talking to the bud tender. They're either taking the recommendation from that trusted friend, or they are finding what's being advertised to them, you know, where they are. So our goal is to go and find them and hopefully give them more information about how MixMix fits into their lives. And then that ask starts going back to retailers as well. So it's not just a push from a bud tender, it's also a pull from, you know what, we've got a lot of consumers asking for this. Maybe we should take a look at it too. On the bud tender side, we've worked with a lot of fantastic independently owned dispensaries. We get a variety of ideas from them on what works for both the low dose consumer, so when it's microdosing, and our varieties come in 2, 5, and 10 milligrams that can be stacked, so you can down up or down. But for someone that's not looking for 25 milligram gummy or a shot or something that's a much higher dose and a much higher experience either, we want to have a little bit of language for what else is there to recommend. And we often do that with sponsored demo days. We work with them on co-branding with brands that we find are doing great work from a positioning standpoint in the market too. But demoing is a really strong way to, just like in regular CPG, how to get a quick taste so that you lower the risk on that purchase decision down, and a little bit of confidence. And you know what? I like that first taste. I'll give this a shot. So demoing is definitely a big one. We also are trying to make this a little less complicated. I think a lot of the language as a consumer walking into a dispensary is, are we doing indica or sativa? Are we doing uppers? Are we doing downers? Are we, what mood are we in? Are we trying to solve a specific ailment? like our product is not positioned as a medical product. We're trying to take the edge off and take some control of your mood. So it's more of the versatility of it. It's more of where you can use it and how to mix it up. That really changes that conversation on, I'm looking for a way to help me sleep. And instead it's pivoting to, hey, you know what? You can actually try to incorporate this in lots of different places in your life. And then you have control on that occasion yourself.
It's really fascinating, those dynamics, like working with those independent stores. And what you mentioned, obviously, you know, consumer education and kind of spreading the word through the, like, natural, just like word of mouth kind of marketing has been a big, obviously, driver for you. I guess when you think about, like, really your more kind of like traditional advertising, I know that's something that's obviously highly regulated, even in markets where it is, you know, completely recreationally legal. But what kind of things do you grapple with on the advertising side, whether it's online or in person? Do you do any, like, I don't know, like a billboard or something? But what's kind of the general landscape of, like, I guess, as opposed to like a traditional CPG, like things like the cans and cannot do's when you're advertising something that does have cannabis derived THC?
Yeah, we're a little bit biased, honestly. So we, meaning Allison, Caitlin, myself, my co-founders come from a marketing agency background. So ex-BBDO, different verticals in the Omnicom family. I've worked in alcohol beverage. Both of them have as well. They've had clients in smoking cessation, in household fragrance, in pest control. All those are, for very different reasons, highly regulated industries. They have very deep rules about what their marketing codes are, what advertising codes are. Cannabis, honestly, is just a different version of those. There are rules. They do change. They're a different state to state sometimes. They evolve. But that's the case with lots of other regulated markets too. So as long as we keep on top of that, and for example, like Allison is part of the Cannabis Media Council. So there's kind of a finger on the pulse of both what is the way things are set up today versus, hey, we can see a proactive way to a better place in the future, you know, trying to keep things both honest and transparent for the consumer that's being advertised to, but then also for the brands to operate responsibly in that space. So our job is to simply stay informed for the opportunities where we have an opinion about, you know, what works and what doesn't, you know, we'll be vocal about it. But it's really just applying our experience from regulated markets to another version of it, and one that's a bit more volatile and evolving as legalization progresses.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, but you say it's not as much as a challenge as it is just you need to have diligence to make sure that you're, you know, staying within the bounds of those things. And then if you're confident that you are, you can obviously still have like some creativity and do the things that you want to do and do the type of messaging that you want to do, right?
Yes. It's knowing where to take a little bit of risk because the downside is not that bad. But yes, that's a way of saying there's a lot of work involved. There is, the diligence is a great way to say it, but it's a known, you know, you can find the regulations and abide by them.
Yeah, no, it's really fascinating. And I suppose to that point, what have you kind of seen as maybe the most like effective use of, you know, your marketing dollars with the company? Has it been online? Has it been kind of in person? I mean, in regulated markets, whenever I drive through, I mean, New York State where I am is a regulated market. I mean, it's legal. There doesn't seem to be as much like, you know, brick and mortar yet. They've been very like kind of stingy with that. But I know when I used to drive across the border into Maine, or when I used to go into Massachusetts, like there's billboards everywhere, those like border dispensaries, you know. So what have you kind of seen, or like in your mind, the most effective way to that your advertising goes the furthest, like, I suppose?
I'll take a bit of a dive on that question because we're just 5.5 weeks into the market. So we do have the plans to pulse each of those pieces. Looking at other brands, I think it's of return is very brand dependent. So high dose cannabis products and edibles versus inhalants, very different consumers they're going after and very different places to advertise to them. They may work wonderfully with heavy budtender education, looking for swap outs, looking for a competitive product that you want to be named instead of them. Because we are a less common to new format, there's not a ton of stick packs. There is going to be more, obviously, as time goes by. Our piece is going to be focused more on that consumer education piece. I think a lot of our early spending has been towards demoing. It's been to running sponsored events where you can have small to medium-sized groups interact with the product, access us as the founders, and even talk with our retail partners as well about all the different ways that this product works in ways that may be different from how they've experienced cannabis before. So I think in the future, we're definitely going to be doing A/B testing where we can between markets. Yeah, outdoor advertising is always interesting. It's kind of the obvious one when consumers are going down the highway within that big stretch between two cities. They see a ton of cannabis billboards. Based on clients we've worked with in the past, it's mixed results. Some work great, others are, they kind of treat it as a table stakes sort of thing for areas they're very active in. We are hopefully looking to hold value for our brand and for consumers. We will pass back margin when we can directly to the consumer where possible. And when we look at advertising as part of that value chain, it's probably going to go to education in all the forms that could take. That could be not just demoing, but also digital content that consumers can access and then see how other people are interacting with the product.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. And sorry, I meant to ask earlier on, but when did you actually bring this product to market for the first time? When was your like initial launch, I suppose?
It was back in late March. That's launching in Chicagoland, so Chicago and suburban areas in Illinois. We are likely going to stay in the Midwest for a bit. So Michigan is probably our next launch market as well. And we're spinning up for that with our co-packer there. But yeah, it's early days for us, even though the work has been going on for, we always try to remember, has it been 18 months or 2 years? But it's been a bit in the background on the planning stages.
Congrats, by the way. I did not realize it was that early on. So really, congratulations. Awesome. I think there's nothing but opportunity for a product like this. So novel. I think it's like for someone like me, I see, I come across something like this, I'm like, this is exactly what I'm looking for. I didn't even know this is what I needed, but this is exactly what I needed. And then I guess, I think this is obviously, you know, one of those things I mentioned, like commonality of experience and entrepreneurs in different industries and different stages of their business. One of the biggest, I think, takeaways from doing well over 100 podcasts in the CPG space now is just one of the biggest pieces of advice I get from folks is basically just like to anybody who might be starting in a CPG realm or in something like this is, you know, the roadmap is going to be probably 5 times as long as you think. Like you think you can get a product developed and in the market in 6 months, it's going to take anywhere from, like you said, 18 months to 2 years, right? So as far as like that commonality of like entrepreneur experience goes, this is just another kind of example of that. I'm sure you were not expecting it to take 2 years, but it definitely, definitely does. And to that point, I know I mentioned there's always a question I do always ask on the podcast. I love people's answers to. It's always so fascinating, which is, and I know it's very new for you, but obviously everything you learned in the past 2 years doing the product development and even though being in the market for 3 months, obviously you learn a ton once you get out there for the first time. So if you could go back and kind of start this business again, I suppose, if you could give yourself any one piece of advice, if you were to do it again, what do you think that piece of advice would be?
It's a great question. You know what? So before doing MixMix, and I still do this fit now, I was running advisory services for beverage brands that were in the startup space. So typically brands that are just pre-revenue to a Series B. So in my time, I've got a chance to meet tons of startup folks and experience their problems as an advisor, as a consultant, as someone from the outside. What a great place to learn before going and doing it myself. That's the narrative I told myself, and it has proven to be very true. I think the advice I would give myself is similar to what you mentioned there. Time is definitely the thing that people don't get right. And it's not their fault necessarily. There are people that they put optimism above the plan and the strategy. And there has to be a balance. You have to be optimistic. You have to be able to have the grit to just keep moving forward. But that doesn't replace having, you know, a good strategy in place on the sequence of events that happen and the focus. So I think it's related to time, but the thing I didn't understand when I was an advisor only and talking to startups is bandwidth. I can tell them, here are the 5 things you need to do. They have time to do like one half of those things, or the budget, or the people on their team to execute that. They know that they need to do everything else. They know it's important. They know that, you know, all these things matter. It's the bandwidth to be able to pull it off. And that's the life that, you know, my two co-founders and I are in right now. So if I had the advice back when we started, it would probably be put a little more focus on what you want to accomplish in the short term, meaning within the next 12 months, and then rerun the calculations on how much time that's going to take and simply plan for that. There's some great founders out there that I admire that have, you know, they're going to plan to build this business for 100 years. Like they're not going to take the pressure of VCs or their investors or what the market seems to dictate to them. They're going to make the decisions that I'm going to be here for a very long time. And sometimes that means moving slower. So I think celebrate those wins on the doors you sign up and the places you have today, and then spend more time with them on building their loyalty, building consumers' loyalty in those places before feeling the pressure to like jump out and scale. We put that pressure on ourselves right now, but it's a very real thing. What happens is you get distracted. You lose focus because you're trying to do too many things. I think that's the biggest thing I would tell myself if I could go back in time.
Yeah, it's great advice. And again, probably not surprised to hear it's a very common answer I get to that question. Yeah. It's one of the most important things and one of the hardest things, it's seemingly to manage as an entrepreneur. I think you can get so lost in the kind of like day-to-day operations, especially when a lot of folks that come on, it's just them, or maybe it's them and their partner or wife or husband is like the CFO. So it's like basically one person with a little help from one other, you know, trying to do everything that, you know, you three are doing. It can be, I mean, you know, you get into the operations, you start to have some growth, the logistics ends up taking up all of your time, but you still have other things to do. So like, you know, that your 7 p.m. to midnight becomes something else outside of the logistics side. And then it's very easy to lose sight of, you know, your short-term goals, just trying to keep the operative side of the business fluent, I guess. So it's really good advice. And, you know, after you hear it for the 30th time, it's not anecdotal evidence anymore. This is like one of the very most real things in the CPG space. I think if somebody asked you, like, what did you learn from doing this podcast for the past 3 months? That's probably what I would say is almost exactly what your answer was. So I appreciate you being a part of that conversation, shedding some light on that. Seems to be a lot of folks that listen to the podcast are people who are looking to get into the CPG space for the first time or very early on their journey like yourself. So I really appreciate you sharing that perspective. And also just wanted to ask, Matt, just for anybody listening, anybody might be interested in, you know, take a look at your product if nearby in the area, want to try the product, or maybe interested in a potential business partnership with you in any way. What's the best way to stay in touch with you all at MixMix?
Follow us on socials. LinkedIn is a fantastic platform for cannabis. It's the most cannabis friendly one that's out there that doesn't always help consumers, but it definitely helps the B2B world from a service provider and partnership standpoint. So we are all active and vocal there. GetMixMix.com is the greatest, quickest way to find our stores that are live with menus attached to it. I'm pretty easy to find. So I always push people to take their networks more seriously, like be very proactive about it. We do that as well. And we would be nothing without the folks that we've surrounded ourselves with that help us in these really tight times, solving big problems, giving us access to other people's brain power. So I always welcome connections, people that want to like chat, talk through things. I'm certainly doing it a ton myself. So don't be a stranger and reach out anytime.
Awesome. Well, Matt, I just want to say thank you again for coming on, man. I really appreciate your perspective. I love everything you're doing. It's such an awesome product. And just want to wish you the best of luck and continued success in everything you're doing, man. And I really look forward to staying in touch as well.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
You too. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, everybody. Thanks.